My Mother, The Person and the Patient is an original podcast written and hosted by me, Fortuna Kuso. This podcast is about my mother, Timira Abdussamad Muhammad, Ayeye we call her, and that's the Somali word for grandmother, and her great-grandchildren call her Ayeye too, and that is their way of saying great-grandmother. On this journey of loss with my mother living with Alzheimer's, I realized I had to accept one fact that Alzheimer's was unpredictable when we first received diagnosis, is unpredictable at this very moment, and will remain unpredictable for the rest of our lives. And that was really a big struggle for me. Because I am a person that likes to organize, to know what will happen next. And if this happens, what am I going to do? How will I deal with this? So I like things to be organized, to keep things under control. That's part of my personality. And that was one of the greatest challenges I faced as a caregiver to my mother. After going through that for years, I thought I conquered that worry, I conquered those challenges and came to that place of acceptance of saying there's nothing I can do. I'll just deal with things as they come. However, 2021, in the midst of COVID lockdown, challenged my perception, my belief, my idea that I came to terms with this. This was March, I think, of 2021. And my mother used the bathroom, did her nightly routine that night on her own, unassisted, and she went to bed. It was Friday night. And Saturday morning, we slept in, maybe 9 or 10. She didn't leave her room. So when I went to her room and I told her, Mom, it's time to get up. We're going to go find something to eat, make some breakfast. She sat up. I told her, okay, let's go, Mom, stand up. And she didn't know where her legs were. And it took me almost a minute to realize that was the issue. She's sitting on the bed, looking at me confused, and I'm telling her, Mom, let's go. So at one point, I walked away from her toward the door, and she is still sitting on the bed. I said, Mom, are you coming with me, or are you still tired? Are you not feeling well? What's going on? And then she just continued to look at me and said, Mom, get up. And she said to me, how? That was one of the saddest moments of my mother living with this disease. She says, how? And I said, what do you mean? She said, how do I get up and walk? And I said, with your legs, get up. She looked at me, didn't know what her legs were. So I walked back to her and I tapped on her legs and I say, here are your legs. Stand up. And then she looked as if she had just noticed her own two legs were right there. Like she didn't know they were there. There was some kind of disconnect in her brain. I didn't really know what to do, and I didn't really know how to deal with it. So I sat down on the floor beneath her feet, and I started rubbing and massaging her feet. And after 2 or 3 minutes of doing that, something just clicked in her head, and she said, oh, why are you sitting on the floor? It's like she wasn't there for the last 5-10 minutes. And she had just arrived. And I almost got mad at her and told her, you just told me you couldn't walk, right? And then she got up and she went to the kitchen. We made breakfast, we ate, and the rest of the day she was fine. For the following 2 weeks, that happened 4 more times where my mother woke up and didn't know where her legs were or didn't know how to walk until I was on the Easter break. In Ontario, we get Good Friday and then the weekend, and then we get Easter Monday. So we get those 4 days. So that was the Easter weekend that I was off, that my mother finally stopped. No matter how long I rubbed her legs, I put heating pad on them. I tried stretching her legs. That connection of her getting up and using her legs and knowing where they were was lost. And that was so sudden. and so unexpected. I think part of me didn't expect my mother not to walk. I read about Alzheimer's and the way it makes the person deteriorate both cognitively and physically. And the doctors, her caregivers, everybody told me these are some of the things that could happen. But two things that I did not really expect to happen to my mother was her not being able to walk. If she had a stroke, I would have accepted that she might not be able to walk. But the way things were, I couldn't really imagine her forgetting to walk. It's because my mother was an avid walker. If I thought Alzheimer's was unpredictable before the day my mother forgot to walk, that day I realized it was also the greatest thief, is stealing one piece of my mother on every turn. When you listen to how we arrived at my mother's diagnosis and what followed, it's so easy to see her just as the patient, to see her as nothing more than the disease that reduced her to shell of her old self. But I want also to tell you about my mother, the person, the fierce woman that told her stories unapologetically, celebrating the beautiful parts and harsh realities equally. I want to share with you the stories she told us about her life as a girl growing up in a small village, the tales that marked her adulthood. I want to share with you all her losses and the ultimate winnings. The following chapter is one of those stories reconstructed from my childhood memory. The family that took Timino lived in a sprawling, dusty makeshift homestead. This family lived in a temporary place. The ground beneath them vibrated with a perpetual motion. Nothing in their surroundings seemed to attach them to the land. She had heard her parents talk about nomadic people. She understood it was life that demanded that they relocate in search of land for their cattle to graze. But she'd never seen such people before. Now standing in their yard, she saw a terrible reality. They had no farms, vegetable gardens, cowsheds, or chicken coops as they had at home to keep them in place. She saw no tinar to bake bread. Did they even know the taste of such delicacy? There were no trees to mark property lines as if the land was as fluid as those within it, a river flowing in a never-ending motion. Three single dome-shaped akals stood apart, unlike the log cabins Timur's family lived in. The akalis were made with wooden frames and covered with thick, hand-woven cedars. They were small and compact, easy to dismantle and put back together. Such would allow a quick getaway to follow a rainstorm somewhere on the horizon. The landscape lacked the connectedness Timur's village provided, as if the geographical formation of the rocks and drought-induced craters were the signs of here today and gone tomorrow. She'd often heard adults in her village speak disparagingly about how the nomads lived. "Their children get no education," one person or another would remark. "They don't even know how to pray." All those thoughts crowded her mind as she stood there, waiting for instructions on what to do next. She needed to use the outhouse, but she saw not a single place that could serve as a place to relieve herself. She was thirsty, beyond thirsty, but there was no water well, even when she scanned all four corners of the property. A gust of wind came from the west and moved the dry dust off the ground, forming a funnel cloud that whipped sand on her face as it moved to the east. The earth beneath their feet was so dry, Timira thought this family's next move wasn't too far off. With such realization, the same yearning for home she'd experienced while in Nietzsche Kane's house welled within her chest. A feeling so strong gripped her and she almost bolted, but she stopped because she didn't know where to go. This desolate land among these strangers was the only safe place for the moment. Aisha, the woman called the name. A girl, Timira assumed to be the woman's daughter, a little older than Farah, emerged from the middle structure. She stopped in front of her mother. The woman said something Timira didn't hear. The girl turned around without a word and returned inside the same akal she'd emerged from. She was gone for a minute before she reappeared, carrying a wooden pitcher. She walked purposefully until she stood in front of Timira. So close to her, Timira felt the girl's warm breath on her face. "Come with me," the girl said without making eye contact. Timira didn't know where she was taking her, but she was in a desperate need. "Are you taking me to the outhouse?" "Outhouse?" The girl had the same surprise in her tone Nitsa Keynes had when Timira had asked him the same question. "A bathroom," Timira said. Perhaps they used something far more sophisticated than an outhouse like Nitsa Keynes. "I need to use the bathroom," Timira said, the statement she'd learned while in Nitsa Keynes' house. The girl walked ahead of Timira until they reached short bushes at the other end of the property. She placed the pitcher between Timira and her. "Use this," she pointed at the pitcher. Timira lifted it up and almost complained about how little water was there, but she stopped before the words left her lips. A few minutes later, she followed the girl back to the yard where the woman, her husband, and her son were. The woman stepped away from her husband and son when she saw them coming. She beckoned Timira and led her toward the middle akal. She moved the grass curtain to the side and pointed to a colorful mat on the floor. "You can rest here. I'll be right back." She turned around and walked out. Timira sat down and took in the aroma of frankincense, myrrh, and oils that poured out of the clay incense burner in the east corner of the room. Wooden logs crisscrossed each other overhead. Besides two rolled-up mats leaning against one of the walls, the room was clean, cool, and bare. Unlike the foreboding feeling in the yard, it had a welcoming air to it. "Drink this." The woman came back with a wooden mug of cold camel milk. "Until food is ready." She stood in the space to Timira's left and watched her. Timira took a long drink, held the mug tight between her hands, and waited for the question she knew was coming. She'd expected the same question the husband had asked when they first spotted her to come back to her. It didn't. After another satisfying gulp of the milk, Timira turned to her, but the woman wasn't looking back at her. Instead, her gaze was fixed on the door as if she'd expected someone to join them any minute. "Thank you for taking me in," Timira said, to break the ice and give the woman a way to ask her question. She was prepared to lie. Tell her she was separated from people from her village. She wasn't going to acknowledge running. She'd never say she'd left her husband of 6 weeks. No one would help a runaway wife. They would soon take her back to Nitsa Keynes, then put her up a single night. "It's the right thing to do," the woman said and left. The woman returned a few more times that day, apologizing for something or another, the small amount of food she brought, the lack of a comfortable place to sleep. Still, she never approached the subject Timira was worried about, not from the woman or the husband, who reminded Timira each night of the 3 nights she was with them that he was working on arranging her return home. Not even their children. They had 7 children. She counted them with envy of how small her family was. They peeked into the akal Timira was in, taking turns and smiling as if to satisfy their curiosity without uttering a word. The suspicion that lined up their faces never transitioned into words. Maybe they didn't want to know. When the husband led Timira out of the home on her way out to the bus stop 5 miles down the road in the morning of the 4th day, the woman and the children waved at her but didn't approach her. "Abo!" Timiro yelled loudly, even though she was standing in front of the cowshed, only a few steps away from her father and brother. Farah, she called her brother, holding the calf while her father milked the cow. Farah turned to Timiro, and the calf he held pulled out of his grasp and rushed at her father, knocking him off the stool. The content in the milking pail splashed all over her father. He stood up, the white liquid running down over his ma'awis and pooling around the heels of his sandals. His arms sat limbs on his sides. Timira's father's face grew confused. Even though the family that found her had sent him a word of her situation, he appeared shocked she was there. Only a few feet away, Timira took one more step toward him, stopped and waited. She'd expected him to ask her what she was doing there instead of at her husband's home. Did she not insist he gave her away when he didn't want to do that, when he resisted the elder's orders? Timiro, he said tentatively. His lips moved a few more seconds after he called her name, but no words came out. He squinted his eyes, leaned in, and stared at her closely. His upturned lips made the lines on his forehead grow deeper, the way his head tilted slightly to the side. One eye drooped more than the other, which made him appear much older than she'd remembered him. A panic born in the bottom of her stomach blossomed, taking every inch of her insides until the bloom reached her throat. Her skin grew clammy and her mouth dry. Her head swam thick with dreadful thoughts. Did her father not want her home? Timiro, you are here. Farah lunged at her. His tight hug failed to pull her out of the well of uncertainty her father's expression had dropped her in. Her heart thudded against her chest. Before her, her father stood stock still, as if Timiro had reminded him of the vultures that snatched her brother out of his arms, or the death that slunk into their house, stealing her mother away without a word. A long, debilitating minute passed before he approached her. The setting sun sent beautiful golden rays that made the grass beneath their feet glow, incongruous with the turmoil within her. Beads of sweat covered her forehead, but she melted into his embrace when her father finally scooped her in his strong arms and pulled her close to his tender chest. His limbs relaxed, and she emitted long, loud breath, as if she'd been running for days and only now came to rest. Abo, it was her turn to be at a loss for words. Abo, she wanted to confirm she was home, in her father's arms where she belonged. You found your way home, he spoke in a whisper, as if the space between them was fragile, and words spoken aloud would shatter the peace. You are home. Timira exhaled, a long breath she didn't know she was holding. I missed you, Abo, and Farah too. She hung on to her father. She didn't want to let him go for fear of losing him again. Farah joined them in the hug, and they stayed in place like that for a long time. My Mother, The Person and the Patient can be found in Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please remember to follow, like, and share, and join me next week as I share with you another episode of My Mother's Journey as both the person and the patient. Thank you.